This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Can you talk about the inspiration for this film? Just how it happened?
Well, we can't really talk about it because we didn't write it. But the writer, you know, I mean, I think that the thing that was the guiding inspiration for all of us is that the film, the script, felt like it came from life experience. And even though outrageous things happen, I think the goal for all of us was to do something that felt like our lives, that was truthful.
And wasn't that, out of the realm of possibility. We always wanted to keep it in the real world as much as we could. And it felt pretty real to us. I mean, we have a family and, you know, these sort of crazy, absurd situations you find yourself in, it happened all the time to us. So I guess that's why we just related to it.
And I know I was reading that you were looking for a film for a long time that really had some meaning. So what is it about this that really drove you to the lengths that you've been to?
Well, I think that it, to go to what we were saying earlier, it felt truthful. It was incredibly funny at times. I liked the rebellious spirit that it seemed to have, and that every character had a dream of some sort, that they didn't feel like they were all sitting there in service of the story, that they seemed to dream outside the confines of the story, that they lived in the world that we all live in. So that was all appealing. And it wasn't a music video vehicle. You know,
yeah,
it was no...
It was just great characters. And as soon as we met them, as soon as we read the script, I think we both just felt like, you know, we have to see these characters on screen. We just felt we've never felt that in reading a script before. So, I mean, there were many things we liked about it, but mostly it was just this kind of overwhelming feeling of, we have to make this movie, you know.
You spent 5 years doing it. When you were out shopping it around and taking it around, what were people saying? Why weren't they making it?
Well, we got plenty of positive feedback. But I think that, you know, having been through it now, I feel like I could probably pitch it better, and I think I could avoid some of the apprehension that people had. I think tone was a big thing. Oh, you totally disagree.
I think because even now that it's made, it's still hard to describe if someone hasn't seen the movie. It's really hard to describe why this is, if, you know, I mean, we feel it's different, but it's hard to describe why is this different? Why is it not just like every other family road trip movie, dysfunctional family, you know? It's hard to just sort of put your finger on the thing that makes it different or bankable, and especially when, you know, it doesn't have, I shouldn't say this, but it doesn't have, you know, Robin Williams driving the RV, you know, it's not like there's a star kind of
you can just
heading
grab
up
onto
the whole production. It's really an ensemble film, and those are not popular films to make.
It doesn't have the high concept.
Yeah,
no, it's not high concept. In fact, it's a
very
complex,
low,
messy, sloppy
messy
concept.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what we love about it, is that it's, you know, I have no idea if we'll find an audience. I mean, I hope so, but, and obviously we've had
people,
some great, you know, the fact that Steve has exploded, the fact that we have the cast we have. I mean, if you have a pulse, hopefully you realize these are all great actors.
You at least want to see them.
Why would all these actors get together? I mean, hopefully that will be a question. But I don't know.
What I liked the most that surprised me about this film was at the end, she basically sucked on stage and she lost. Now, that was real.
Yes.
Because, you know, I'm thinking, okay, here we go, the underdog.
Yes.
She's going to get up there and she's going to sing like, you know, an angel, and she's going to win the prize. But she sucked. She went up. Now, was that the way it was intended from the beginning? Because that was real.
Without giving it away, because we don't want to.
No,
yeah,
no.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, we hope people won't give it away. But I think that we really loved just that the film surprises you at the end, and that that was a tricky part, because the end of the film was the least defined, you know, and we...
In terms of how to pull
that
off.
But that was the most real, because there's a lot of people have gone through that experience just like that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't
right.
need a superhero.
It doesn't end up with
no,
the, yeah.
No, I mean, I think that... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think this movie, and what appealed to us about it was it's a lot about loss and sort of the value of loss. You know, that we're such a winner-oriented society, and we sort of felt like, well, what about all the people that aren't winners, that aren't, you know, super famous and wealthy and just kind of on that, in the winner category? What about everybody else? And I feel like this movie sort of celebrates that, the value of just, you know, doing things for the sake of doing them, for the pleasure of doing them.
I like the fact she was losing, she was sucking, they was booing her, and that brought the family together.
Right.
They all jumped up
right.
on stage.
Right,
okay.
Right. Right.
That's what
that's the thing you don't expect.
I mean,
yeah,
that was
exciting to us. I mean, the first line of the film is there are two kinds of people in this world, winners and losers. And we thought, okay, that's the framework that this film will carry for a while, and then we're going to reveal that you don't have to be in the contest. That
they won by losing.
Well, they won by giving up on the contest. That they, I mean, we always talk to the cast about this is a film about looking at life as a contest versus looking at life as a dance. That you can just enjoy life. That you can just seek pleasure in doing what feels good rather
than judging yourself,
or letting other people judge you.
Can you talk individually, just briefly, about the main stars of the film and what you liked about them, why you cast them, and what you think they bring to the film? I mean,
well,
Steve, Tony,
sure.
Alan.
I think in general, we sought to choose people who you might not expect in these roles so that there was always a distance to span between what's expected of these characters versus who these actors are and what they've done. So Tony, as an American mom, you know, she can do anything, and we felt that she would be a fresh expression of what a modern-day mom is. And I think she does an amazing job of being an American mom. I think
she's done it before, but it's
a
different thing.
A different
when you've
mom.
Got, like, a big, this sort of unwieldy family. You know, it's a very different role than what she played before. And she's just got so much depth she brings just about as who she is, you know. So you get the sense of just a really strong and person and integrity, you know. And I think we wanted that. We didn't want the mom to be this kind of lightweight, put upon, you know, and just about to fall apart at any moment. You know, we liked that because she's actually the most together character of the whole film.
But as a mom, you really identify with her, actually.
Yeah, and she's smart and capable.
She's making good choices, too. I mean, I think she just supports everybody for who they are. And I think Tony really understands that. She's got a big heart. She's a very open, you know, person on film that comes across, I think.
And then Greg Kinnear, you know, he's one of those people who can do drama but still has an innate ability to be funny.
That's exactly,
you know,
what I said.
You know, and he's also a kind of person where we wanted you, when you first meet Richard, to not know whether how successful he was. That it wasn't, you know, there's certain actors, I won't name names, but when you see them on screen, you know, ah, that's the loser, that's the sad sack. And Greg isn't that. And, you know, Greg has energy. And Greg, you know, the Richard character is sort of the classic American entrepreneur who, you know, he feels
struggling.
You know, we're all taught that if you just do what you're supposed to, you'll eventually win. And the fact is that he might not. You know, he may dream of being great, but he may not be great enough. You know, so Greg, you know, and that was probably one of the toughest roles because
it's the least likable.
You know,
character.
He has to overcome the most sort of bad vibe, and then. Steve Carell, you know, Steve Carell is intelligent in everything he does, whether it's the silliest weatherman imaginable. He brings an intensity and a respect for the character. And he just
goes for it, you know.
Yeah.
There's no sort of, I've seen this guy before, I'm going to, you know, it's not a cliche. It's a complete, like, you know. I just to be able to deliver the line "I love lamp," you know, do that with conviction is just, I don't know how he does it. But
so we were very excited about, you know, asking this of him, and when we met him, it was so clear that he was eager to do this and that he had the ability, and so you know, it was just a pleasure.
But in some ways, he was the biggest jump for, you know, even the producers were like, well, you know, what's he done that's like this? Because they hadn't seen 40-year-old version. And
I don't think they saw The Office. The Office wasn't out, but a friend of ours was directing The Office, and he said, you've got to look at Steve Carell for this. And we got a copy of The Office before it was out, and we had seen his other movies. But it was meeting him that was the clincher. I mean, he's just one of those incredible, like, really everyone in the film, but he's just one of these really warm, intelligent
people. Down to earth. Doesn't need to be funny every 5 minutes.
He's not a needy comedian, and that's a very refreshing. I'm sure you've all seen
that.
Trying
to be funny every. And then Alan is, you know, like a hero of ours.
He's Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
You know what? What else do you need to say? You know, it's. I'm sorry.
He's had a cup of coffee. You're really.
Yeah.
I knew. You're really.
And Abigail.
Well, Abigail was, we did a huge search. Actually, the first thing we said before we even had a green light, we said to the producers, we need to start looking for this little girl, because if we get a green light and we get a cast, but we don't have the little girl, we can't start shooting. We can't, you know, compromise on that role. And so we spent, I don't know how, really kind of 2 years searching, and every English-speaking country. And we ended up finding Abigail, who is from New York and had done, you know, several movies by the time we went to do this movie. But she, you know, she just is Olive. You know, she, so much of who Abigail is what we needed for that part. And she's just an absolute, you know, natural, genuine performer.
And I have to say Paul Dano, because we haven't talked about Paul. And Paul was someone who, again, we saw very early. And we kept waiting for the movie to be greenlit, and Paul kept getting older and older each year. And we would meet him. He would come in to town, and we'd hook up, and we'd sit at the, you know, diner, and we'd look at him. Oh, he still has pimples. He's still, you know,
still have that kind of boyish, round face.
You know, but there was just something about him. You know, we're big fans of Harold and Maude, and you know, we just felt like he could be like a Bud Cort kind of character. This
well, he's
character
a very introverted kid in life. He's pretty quiet, and but there's a lot going on in his head. You look at him and you know he's an interesting guy. You might not be able to pull it all out of him, but it's
the universe is there.
Yeah. What are the challenges of working together? Or the pluses
working with him? I'll tell you what talks too much. No.
It's just, you know, we've worked together for a long time, and we were collaborators first, and then we later became a couple. And I think that having years to build those working habits were really important.
So it's not different doing a movie, just the same thing.
It really was just an extension of what we had done before, but I think for the movie we were probably more prepared than we are for most things, because we'd spent 4 years thinking about it and planning and, you know, breaking the scenes down. And we would do the scenes together, because there's two of us. We could sort of act out the scenes, play different parts, and really explore the material fully, and so that we were very
poorly.
Much on
poorly,
but yeah,
but
we were on the same page. You know, there was never like showing up at the set and going, "Wait a minute, I thought you said, I don't know." It didn't happen.
You know, this movie at Sundance Film Festival was a big title, that big opening weekend, made headlines. That must have been very satisfactory, or been very joyful, I guess, after 5 years. Can you talk a little bit about that first?
Well, The best thing was just that, you know, we had finished the film a couple days before the screening, so we had never really seen it with a large audience, and just being in Eccles with, I don't know, 1,400 people, whatever it was just so satisfying to hear them really laughing and rocking. You know, what's been, we've gone across the country now, starting to promote it, and we do Q&As in every town, and there's this thing where kind of joking together about the jackknife effect, where people fall forward in their, you know, they fall forward in their seat, and it's just, I mean, we've never seen our work in a public place. It's always been on TV, and not that our work has ever had such a great screenplay and an amazing cast. It wouldn't generate that. But,
kind of response.
Yeah, but it's just been so satisfying to see people like it.
And one real quick follow-up, if I can. You know, Sundance can be a sort of double-edged sword.
Of course.
It's sort of the Sundance curse of being the big film that doesn't hit. Yeah. Any trepidation about that?
I think that, and also being, you know, kind of the headline of the story being the price tag. And so, you know, there was a lot of fear about that. But then I think since then we've been showing the film a lot, and we've had the chance to talk to our audience and get a sense of a response. And I think that we're close to overcoming that, like, you know, so what's so great about this big Sundance hit, you know. But it was a concern of ours. But at this point, you know, you just kind of, for us anyway, I think we have to just, we're happy that we got to make the movie we wanted to make. And all of this is just sort of, you know, after that, after the fact. I mean, it's great if it does well, but we're trying to just, you know, feel the sense of accomplishment just for having done the film.
It's out of our heads. No. We don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, well, that's
You know, 4 years of just hoping that it was going to be made and that we could do it, it's been done, it's out, so
it is like
forward.
Sending your kid off to college. You know, you've kind of done all that you can do to hopefully prepare them for the world, but
what's the pacing like for you guys? I mean, after this is the hoopla, this is done, do you jump right back in the saddle with the next project, or
we're working right away. We've done some videos. We have a Red Hot Chili Peppers video coming out, but we're really working to find our next film, which just is going to take time. And we have things that we're developing, but it just takes time.
We're not going to jump into anything.
We'd rather do something good. Yeah,
can I ask
sure.
you quickly
yeah.
about one issue that just interests me as a parent? Without getting too insight, yeah. the objectification of women and the beauty pageants. I mean, I know you're not making any judgments.
Right.
But he says, you know, her brother says this is fucked.
And right.
Which I really love, because that was very powerful for me. And I wonder if that was an important message that you wanted to come over, or whether you don't care about beauty. And the way, you know, she's a little bit overweight, but, you know, that doesn't make her not beautiful.
Right.
That whole, the looks and women.
Well, I think that the pageant was a great sort of context in which you could see her beauty. You know, you could see how natural and how innocent she still was. She was still a kid against all these little girls who really had that pretty much taken out away from them, you know, and they're acting like robots and, you know, are little objects. So it was more just about, you know, this is the ultimate sort of contest where you can see being judged, you know, for what you look like rather than who you really are. And I think she ultimately, I think, triumphs, you know, and it's kind of nice to see her in that way triumph.
Well, it's so nice to see it so clearly visually expressed. You know, to see the girls in the bathing suit competition and to see this natural,
in contrast,
you know, kid with these very kind of uptight performance. But, you know, I mean, it's our goal, though, is to just try and remain as neutral. We think the issues are absolutely active.
Yeah.
But we'd much rather have people come to those conclusions.
And we kind of don't want to really talk about it a lot in the press, because we don't really want people to know they make it to the pageant.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of...
Yeah. Okay.
So know they are, but, you know...
Yes. But thank you all so much. Sorry.